Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Cast to the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. My name's Josh, and I'm joined by...
his blob, Tom.
Yes, my lob itself. Oh, and today we're going to be talking about an episode that has been... This was a part of our extra life stream. Somebody graciously donated. And who was that person, Tom?
That was 21st Century Fool. You can see them hanging out in our chat on Twitch from time to time. They're probably one of our most frequent friends on Twitch. But yes, they requested this game by donating at that tier. And we thank you once again for helping us make, yes, this a successful charity donation for the big, beautiful kids in the world. And today we are talking about A Boy and His Blob on the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Yes, we are. And this is like, this is prime time, my go-to era of gaming, because I'm a very big retro gamer, as you can see from right here. I have three giant cases filled with retro games, and I have never really played this game up until this episode. I dabbled into it once or twice just to kind of get an idea and see what it's like and what it's similar to. But never really have I jumped into it as like, this is the peak of NES gameplay that you need to play. Like, you never hear anyone say, you know, you really need to play A Boy and His Blob.
Right. Similar in that it's not something I've ever seen talked about that frequently. The biggest exposure I had to this, honestly, was the 2009 Wii remake that came out and got decently good reviews, as we'll discuss. And it's funny, when 21st Century Fool pitched this, I said, do you want the Wii version or the original? And they were like, no, the original. I feel like you should go with that, because why do the Wii version if you don't have context for it? Right. So we're just going to say that up front. This is about the NES original. We did not play, I didn't play, at least, the Wii version. Did you, Josh?
No, I never did. Okay. I never played the Wii version either. No.
Okay, I never have either. There's a version of it on Steam now, and possibly other consoles, where you can play it more freely. It's not just a Wii exclusive anymore. We're just going to kind of talk about it in general towards the end here, but just be warned, if you came here because you're a passionate Boy and His Blob Wii fan, you're gonna have your heart broken a little bit. This is the OG, baby.
So give me some of that nitty gritty for A Boy and His Blob.
All right,
stretch it out, stretch it out. Do you need me to throw you a jelly bean?
Yeah, give me the pretty bean so I can give you the gritty. So, A Boy and His Blob was released in December 1989 on the Nintendo Entertainment System, and it was later ported to the Wii Virtual Console on November 23rd, 2009. This was developed by Imagineering. And if you don't know what that studio is, don't worry, you're not alone, because it doesn't exist anymore, but we will tell you about it in this episode. Imagineering was the in-house developer for the publisher Absolute Entertainment. And if you don't know who they are, don't worry, because they don't exist anymore, but we'll tell you about them in this episode. And, you know, most notably, right up front, boom, this says a David Crane game. And that's, you know, different for video games, especially in this era, Josh. Not a lot of video games had, you know, ownership put on them. This isn't like films where it's like, you know, a Steven Spielberg film.
Yeah.
That Tom doesn't Clancy. Happen a lot in gaming. Well, yeah, but that's more of like a brand ownership thing, you know? Like, this is the developer, the person who made it, getting to have their name right up front, Josh. Do you know who David Crane is?
David Crane, the only thing I know him for, really, was he made a lot of the games from that NES, Super Nintendo, Genesis era. But he was also notably a programmer on Night Trap.
Oh, I did not know he worked on Night Trap. Well, Josh, it's funny that you have heard of him, but you didn't mention like what is his biggest game, an iconic game that put him on the map.
Yeah.
And that, do you know what that is?
Yeah, he made Pitfall, right?
Yep, he is the original creator, designer of Pitfall, the Atari game where, you know, you play a little dude who has to swing on ropes across traps and it makes that noise, you know, every time he does it. You ever play Pitfall, Josh?
I loved Pitfall, yeah. I think it was great for, it was like an open world game in that Atari era, you know, that Atari generation. There's so many different ways you can go, different enemies, different ways you can traverse the you know, through going underground, through jumping over, you know, crocodiles' heads in the water, through swinging and stuff like that. Yeah, there was a lot that you could do for a game of what, the Atari 2600 ColecoVision era?
I played it a lot as a kid because my grandma had an Atari at her house for like all the cousins to play when they came over. This is a hot take. I think Pitfall might be, if not the best, at least like a top three Atari game for how distinct its color palette made it look graphically, for its good level of like challenge versus playability, sound design, you know, arguably
I'd put it in
the best.
I'd put it in a top three, definitely. So he goes ahead and makes a game called A Boy and His Blob, which...
He did some other things before that, Josh.
Well, sorry. I'm just so excited to talk about this game.
I know, but you got to set up David Crane because the dude's got the gall to put his name on a game. It's like, who do you think you are? You know, run around leaving scars. Who does this guy think he is? Do you know what else he did? You know what else he's known for, Josh?
What else? Talk to me. Tell me other things.
He is one of the founding members of a little mom and pop video game outlet called Activision. Have you heard of it?
No.
The Call of Duty Queen. The Tony Hawk Dream.
Oh my God.
The Crash Bandicoot Machine.
Oh man.
Josh, Activision, arguably one of the most powerful and dominant gaming companies of today, was founded by David Crane and some partners off the success of their Atari days.
That's awesome.
That's where it all started.
That's crazy.
And then, yeah.
And it's like a nitty gritty inside of a nitty gritty.
It is. The nittiest grittiest. So he leaves Activision because he wants to focus on stuff for himself. He's very self-driven. He had a philosophy about what he thought games could do. He, funnily enough, thought the Atari was getting too flooded with cheap crap games. And he thought this before the game crash of 83 happened. So like he was kind of ahead of his time.
It's like he predicted
and
it.
So So he leaves Activision, forms Absolute Entertainment. And in 6 weeks, he makes this game. 6 weeks. And now we have it. Now we have A Boy and His Blob. So when's the first time you played A Boy and His Blob?
Oh, man. So I probably played this game... Actually, I would say pretty close to when the Wii version came out. Because I was like, is this going to be a straight-up remake? Is this a sequel? Which we already got a sequel. There was a sequel that was released on the Game Boy. But like, is it another sequel to the game? So let's just try it out. And I booted it up and I started playing it. And I was like, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Prince of Persia. The original side-scrolling Prince of Persia. And I don't like this. And that was it. I understood, like, it was different from the NES era style games. It wasn't for me.
Right.
So the fact that I got to go back and revisit this game, I didn't like this game either. I still didn't like it. We can get into it then. But yeah, what about you? When was your first time diving into this?
This week for this show, I could not find a legitimate copy, so I had to find it through other means. And this game is rough. I'm just going to say it up front. It's rough with a capital R.
R-U-F-F.
But it's interesting. And I do want to talk about the things I find interesting and the things that I find, you know, oof. So I'll say that up front. So, Josh, what is the gameplay of A Boy and His Blob? Tell me, like, what are we starting with here?
So you start as the boy, whose name is The Boy, because we don't get a name for him. Da Boy. And his blob friend, Blobber.
Yeah, the blob has a name, but the boy is just, he's some kid.
Yeah, and you have to pretty much get Blobber back to, what is it, Blobatonia?
Blobonia.
Yeah, Blobonia.
The full title of this game, I guess we should specify, it's A Boy and His Blob, Trouble on Blobonia. I screwed it up even just trying to say it there. It's like blah, blah, blah from Arrested Development.
The boy can't jump, can't duck, can't do anything, really, besides move left and right and occasionally up and down. And we'll talk about that here because what the boy can do is give jelly beans to Blobber himself. And when he receives those jelly beans, he does a whole bunch of weird crap. The jelly beans pretty much spark some sort of like a power inside the blob itself, where he can turn into a hummingbird or turn into a jack or turn into a coconut if he wanted to turn into a trampoline.
Well, Josh, I wanted to quiz you. I want to see how many of the flavors you can remember that correspond to each of these transformations.
Okay.
So, yes, Josh is saying that the jelly beans basically allow Blobber to turn into your item inventory. Each jelly bean flavor corresponds with a skill. So, Josh.
Yes.
What does the licorice flavor transform Blobber into?
The licorice... Shit.
it does not turn him into shit, funnily enough.
Because when I was playing, I was trying to correlate them to things.
I will say David Crane.
Wait, it was, it's not, there's not a rope, so it was the ladder.
Yes, the licorice is the ladder. And just going through a couple more of these that I wrote down, David Crane and Nintendo purposefully were like, we have to make the names either similar to the tools or kind of puns.
Yeah,
so
because Applejack made me laugh when I did that.
Applejack, yeah, it turns into like a cart like that rises things up.
Yeah.
Vanilla.
Vanilla was, oh, that was basic. That was, he was some, it was something, umbrella.
Yep, vanilla, umbrella. Honey.
Umbrella. Honey was the bee, right? It was the hummingbird.
Hummingbird, yep. And then the last one I'll give you, fruit punch.
I don't remember that one.
It turns them into a hole that you can drop through.
And oh, David Crane's, that was like one of the most used ones, too.
Yeah, David Crane said the logic was hole punch. So fruit punch, yeah. Hole punch. Yeah. I'm not saying they're good puns. I'm just saying that was his logic behind it.
I never understood the root beer turning into a rocket, either.
I don't either. I guess maybe because root beer is very fizzy, so rocket, I don't know. Which is weird because there's cola, which turns them into a bubble that you can get in and protect yourself with. So like one soda pun is a bubble, but the other is, you know, yeah. I don't know. I don't get it.
I don't get it either. But yeah, you feed these jelly beans to Blobber to have him turn into things to get you to traverse through the land. And I think the ones that I've used probably the most was the hole, the ladder, and the bridge. Oh, and the trampoline. I would say those are probably the ones that I use the most to get from point A to point B. Now, the puzzle side to this game was really good for making you try to think outside the box. It's like you almost have to kind of like jot down and like draw the map of where you were at. So you knew, well, if I drop through this hole here, I will land on this area. And that might put me right next to a treasure chest or something like, or a jewel or something like that I needed. And it was really good in the thinking outside the box era of the game. But, man, was it frustrating trying to give Blobber jelly beans. I was constantly throwing them over his head or throwing them under, and he always looked at me sad. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I only got two buttons.
So, Blobber, man, I want to talk about Blobber because he's arguably the most incredible part of this game. He is an AI-controlled partner that follows you no matter where you go, and he's got some pretty, like, for its time, dynamic, like, responses to you, as you just said. So, to feed him the jelly beans, you have a throw button, and you gotta line it up perfectly for Blobber to open his mouth and catch them and eat them. But if you throw it over his head, he frowns. And what's, like, fascinating, Josh, is that, like, so the boy runs faster than Blobber. So if you run a couple screens ahead, Blobber will, like, take a while. Like, he catches up to you at his own pace in, like, real time. And what's funny is, like, I got a couple screens ahead of him and accidentally hit the throw button. So, like, I basically wasted a jelly bean. And when Blobber got to my screen, he was frowning. He was like, I saw you drop that. You wasted a good jelly bean. You know, it was so, but it was just so, like, wow, like, an NES game could do this?
Yeah, I will say the animation for Blobber was really good. Mm-hmm. I think the style that they did and just, you can tell that they put so much more care into him. And like every time like you gave him a jelly bean, he went down into like a thing. It was like almost like a little bit of a loading screen for him to process what type of bean it was before he turned into whatever you needed him to turn into. I thought it was impressive because, I mean, this is 4 years after the NES comes out. that people are pushing it to the boundaries that they are.
Absolutely. Do you know what Blobbert's look and movements were inspired by?
Oh, no, I want to say the movie where Michael Keaton turns into a snowman.
A Jack Frost. That was several years later. Blobbert was actually inspired. I don't know if you are familiar with the Hanna-Barbera cartoon, The Herculoids.
Yes.
But his movement was inspired by Gloop and Gleep, those characters from that show. That's what they said they took a lot of Blobbert's like looks from, and the way he transforms into stuff. But yeah, Blobbert's really interesting, except when he sucks. And I want to get into this real quick. So, I initially found the opening segments of this game kind of cool because you're dropped into kind of an open area. And you're left to just explore and figure out the tools. It doesn't tell you anything. You're like on a city street. You're leaving your house, which apparently just sits on a pier across from New York City. And you are just running around with Blobbert. And you have to like figure out, okay, I have these jelly beans. What do I... Oh, I throw them. And then, the first time he transformed into something, I was legit like, okay. And then, you know, you see a ledge and it's like, well, I know he turns into a ladder. So let me figure this out, you know. But here's a little problem that I had. It's the fact that some of the beans and the transformations are so experimental that I didn't think to use them in certain situations, or I didn't realize what their full potential was. And when I found out later through research, I was like, oh, crap. So it's really easy to get accidentally separated from Blobbert. I had a situation where he got locked in the lower floor of the New York subway, like in the beginning of the game. Like, I climbed up the ladder, but he didn't come up with me. He was on the bottom floor, and I couldn't get him. And I was, like, really frustrated. Like, what are you doing? So I reset it, played a little bit, couldn't figure it out, whatever. Later, I'm reading, and this is what I found out about the development.
Josh, do you know ketchup, right?
The ketchup, a.k.a. the catch-up bean. So Nintendo figured out this problem with Blobbert early in development and talked about it with Crane, and they invented the ketchup bean in order to solve this. If you have a ketchup bean, you throw it, and then Blobbert will like kind of just poof appear near you because he caught up. But here's the problem, Josh. In the kind of introductory levels where I'm experimenting with the beans, I threw the ketchup bean at him and nothing happened. And you get like a very small amount of those. Like at the beginning of the game, I think I had like 72 licorice beans and 48 vanilla beans. I only had 6 ketchup beans. So I threw it. He didn't eat it. And then instantly I was like, okay, he doesn't eat it, but it's probably bad to waste these because maybe they matter later. So I'm not going to touch this ever again. And then when I got in the situation where I was stuck, my mind never went to the ketchup beans because it was like, no, they're limited. Save them. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you think about things like this? Did you have that problem when you played it?
No, I didn't have any problem where he was stuck. I had just problems with him walking around with me. I was like, get over here, get over here. And like my biggest problem was like when I was on ledges and I had to throw the jelly bean off of a ledge down another screen to his mouth. I was getting frustrated with that because I was wasting a lot of them because he wasn't in position or I wasn't in the right, like I was overshooting or undershooting or I wish I understand you're very limited back then, but I wish there was some sort of a way that like you had like an angle or an arc to see where you were going to throw them or if you could look at another screen. But yes, limitations to what you can and can't do.
Sure.
I get it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And
this could have been quality of life stuff that was fixed in the remake, too.
Right. We don't know. And we're never going to know because we're not playing it. But nope.
I'm not plugging a Wii in for that.
So, Josh, you talk about it was hard controlling Blobbert in comparison to the boy. I just got to say, you know, you complained about how slippery Mario was in Super Mario 64. I was like, he better not defend this.
No.
Because this kid is like his shoes are made of butter and he's on an ice rink.
It's like this kid played Mario 64 and knew how to control somebody in normal life.
The boy is very difficult to maneuver because he has this slide that he has to use like, I guess he picks up so much momentum from moving that he stops and slides a little bit. And that contributes to what you were saying, like the controlling of Blobber, because Blobber bounces around kind of relative to where you are, and he always has to stop behind you.
Yeah.
In a really weird way. Like, I was trying to position him under a ledge to do the ladder tool, and stopping the boy causes him to, like, slide past the point where the ledge actually is. So I'm trying to very precisely position the boy. That's a bad sentence out of context. And he won't go where I need him to go. But then Blobber, you know, will miss the mark too. And that just made lining up certain puzzles so frustrating.
Yeah. And there's times when you're running and there's, like, enemies that are, like, jumping from, like, they're bouncing, like, there's, like, big worm things. And you have to, like, run, kind of slide and stop in the middle of it so it doesn't hit you. And then you have to continue going and picking up that momentum. Yeah, controlling him was terrible too. But, like, I think I was having more frustrations with trying to position Blobber over any of this stuff. And yeah, it got to the point where it was very frustrating.
Right. Like, Blobber is very impressive in that not only is he an AI partner character, but he is your inventory system. He's a living inventory system on the NES of all things. But he also is, like, borderline unusable. It's like having a toolbox on top of a bicycle that's constantly moving around of its own free will. And it's like, I just need a hammer, but the bike won't stop. You know, it's so frustrating.
But throughout traveling up under this underground tunnel connected to a subway, right out, I guess, in New Jersey. Does it take place in New Jersey? Because you're looking at New York.
It's a dirty subway, so I mean.
So you come up, back out, and you can take a rocket to Blobalonia. And when you're there, the game pretty much transitions like more colorful. It's more colorful, more friendly, but everything wants to kill you here.
Oh, yeah. So this boy is a paperweight. Like, just the first enemies that you meet in the game, these white dots that are just bouncing up and down in kind of sequences, like, this is one-hit KO gaming. And again, his start and stop momentum was a big problem for me. You know, it's like, oh, never mind, I'm dead, you know?
Yeah. And you get to the very end and you see that there's, what, like a wizard or, like, some sort of thing?
Yeah. What? I thought it was some kind of golem of something. I don't know. Yeah, it was weird looking.
Yeah. I think they called it. Is it like a. It's the Evil Emperor.
Emperor. Oh, yes, that's right. It is the Evil Emperor because that's on the box art. It's like, help Blobber defeat the Evil Emperor and save Blablonia. Yeah.
And you pretty much drop some like weird acid filled with vitamins or something like that onto it. And then it, boom, immediately cuts to black. And goes right to your end credits scene. And it's like, hey, you're a hero on Blobalonia. And it's like, what?
You just are. Accept your damn metal, kid.
But, like, there's no, like, fight or anything to it. It's just so done. Like, it's just the quickest quick take. It's like they ran out of, like, money when they were making this. And it's like, all right, you know what? That's it. Cut it. Wrap it up. We're good. We got it. We don't need to see this thing die.
So I've said a lot on this show that this era of gaming history was far more creative with concepts than we are nowadays. I feel like there's bigger high concept risks that were taken back then that, you know, get us ideas like, what if a plumber fought dinosaurs in a mushroom land? What if a boy had a blob, you know? But
yeah,
this is one where it's like they had a concept, but I just feel like they didn't know how to end it. It was just like living tool, boy plus blob, Emperor, and the end. You know, it's like, they have all the gameplay down, but they just,
there wasn't really a story without reading the manual or anything like that. But the end scene says, and the evil king is defeated with his own hidden supply of vitamins, and all of Blobalonia salutes their savior.
Oh, cool.
What the hell does that even mean? His hidden supply of vitamins? But if he had vitamins and he was taking the vitamins, how would they have defeated him? They're called one a day. Unless, did he take two a day?
That's the problem. If you take two one-a-days, you explode. That's why it's on the label. I think what we're getting at here, what we reveal, Josh, is this is a pro junk food game, because vitamins are bad and can kill you, but jelly beans can open you up to any kind of possibility. So you hear that, kids? Eat all the jelly beans you can.
So the end of the game, weird. The whole game, weird. But there's weird. One thing that's not weird.
Mm.
Well, I guess that music.
You mean the Indiana Jones theme? That
somewhat Indiana Jones. However, really, really fun and enjoyable NES track.
It's catchy. Yeah, it is a very good use of the NES's like sound processing for music. It's a big loop for a lot of it, but it's a good track to loop. So, I mean, you know, it's like, okay, sure.
It's one of those that didn't really overstay its welcome. It was just like, I enjoy this because there's so many different pieces throughout the song that once it loops, you're like, oh yeah, this is fun. But yeah, I think that's like the thing that I enjoyed the most was the song of this game. The creativity was great. The creativity was fun and it was different. It's a different style of game. There's really is no game like it from this era. I mean, things probably have come and gone to, you know, do something similar to this. I mean, because if you think about the way that the world transforms and works with Blobber, very similar to games like Limbo and games like Inside, where you are a side-scrolling puzzle platformer, where you have to kind of think outside the box in order to get over to your next objective, stuff like that. But I think narrative-wise, it's an NES game. You're just doing what you can. And I hate to say that because there are some great NES games that have amazing stories.
Yeah, it's gameplay and concept first, story second. And there's a lot of times where that can work. There's a lot of times where both are balanced well. This is just not one of either of those scenarios. It's just like, wow, cool. And then the more you get over the initial like shock of what it does, it's like, is this it? What am I working towards? Like, what's my actual goal here? What is Blablonia? I don't care. But yeah,
by the time I got to Blablonia, I didn't care about it.
Yeah. So
I was so frustrated.
Well, Josh, these mixed opinions that we have were shared by game critics at the time. A lot of them, you know, were similar to what we're feeling. It's like, technically, this is pretty dang impressive, but also, like, I just don't give a crap. And despite that, this was a huge seller. It was released, you know, David Crane got this done right before Christmas, which was the goal, and it became Absolute's highest selling title. It won a lot of awards for its design, and amusingly enough, you know, maybe I'm a year or two off, but I know that the early 90s is when Joe Lieberman and a lot of other, you know, like United States senators started the whole anti-video game crusade of like, they're too violent, they're destroying America's youth, you know, video games are bad. This game won a lot of parental advocacy awards for like its positivity, for encouraging kids to think outside the box in terms of like using Blobber. So this game got like good notices and was well received by the people who did play it, which were a lot given its financial success.
Yeah, and like I did say earlier, there was a sequel to this game that did come out on the Game Boy.
Yep.
And they were going to create a remake for it on the DS, but it was scrapped and then later released on the Wii.
Yes. So the rights to this are currently owned by Majesco because Absolute closed, and Majesco was involved with publishing the Wii remake. Wayforward Technologies developed it and Majesco published it.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, it's nice to play something that I haven't played to complete before or more of than just like, you know, 3-4 minutes of it. So thank you, 21st Century Fool, for, you know, donating to our Extra Life stream. And thank you for recommending this game that I'm probably never going to go back and play again.
Is that to say that you would never recommend this to anyone?
I think you can watch a stream of it or watch a video of it or something like that. Or, you know, just watch gameplay footage that we're going to be putting over our faces here on youtube.com/castofthepast. But Yeah, I probably wouldn't recommend somebody play this game. Yeah. Too frustrating.
I agree with you, and it's also just the fact that it's not very easy to get. As I said, I had to jump through a lot of hoops to get it, and it was just kind of like, all right. So, yes, it's probably just worth researching for like a cool historical perspective. I don't think you need to put a full play session in. And I agree with Josh, 21st Century Fool. Thank you for the recommendation. I hope we didn't break your heart. I hope I don't find out that 21st Century Fool actually has a closet full of Boy and His Blob merch that is just going to, like, you know, be crushed.
It's just a closet full of jelly beans.
It's a closet full of jelly beans. And he was hoping, he was like, they're going to love it. They're going to come over and have jelly beans with me. And it's like, ooh, wait, actually, no.
But until next time, this has been Josh.
And Tom.
And we'll see you in the future. While we boot up the Triflex capacitor, please take some time to subscribe to the show and leave us a review wherever you listen. This show is nothing without you, and any support helps.
If you want to connect with us and discuss the past, present, and future of gaming, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
We also have a Twitch channel where we play games for the show and for fun, so come chat with us anytime.
Thanks again for listening.
And we'll see you in the future.